Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find an see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. You ain't gonna be in there. But 51% of your prison will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Blacks won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economic. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control business and industry, and put that pulls in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 to 13 times for a lead. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folk got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations who got the money. That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with the politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor then is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor then is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk own and control less than 0.035% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. So you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad-mouthing you. And O'Reilly. They can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't even communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisons in the United States are black people. You only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate them. That's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March for what? Who cares? Marching, they never changed anything.
an exclusive first look at the upcoming documentary, 7 a.m.
Because true economic science is a branch of military science. War and money go hand in hand. Most wars are fights so people can make more money, and war is money. That means what? That the European American is not about to prepare black children to compete with his children for control of the economic sector. It's not going to happen. So if black people want this science, we got to teach it, we got to study it, and we're going to have to make some mistakes in perfecting it because we're still babies in the water of global economic commerce. As African people, we are financially illiterate. So we should not be surprised that we're so economically backward because we were never taught how to be economically forward. Our education in America has not provided or prepared us to be able to compete with Europeans economically. The historically black college was designed to do what? Teach you how to work for white people. Public schools, charter schools, parochial schools, independent schools. What is the purpose of education in America for black children right now? To teach them how to make a living working for white people. But I don't want the kids coming to my school to be going to class thinking that I'm learning this so I can go and get paid by a white person. They're going to be empowered to start their own business. When they leave that school, they're going to go into business. And why do we need our people to be self-sufficient? Because when you're not self-sufficient, you can't speak your mind. One of the biggest reasons why black people have been so cowardly in the post-civil rights movement, not standing up for ourselves, standing up for our children, standing up against police brutality, we're scared to lose our jobs. We have to work. We got kids. I can't talk about the racism on my job. I might lose it. So the reason why we're not speaking our mind is because we don't have economic freedom. As Mr. Garvey said, Marcus Garvey said, that a solid racial program must be built on a solid economic foundation. Show me your economic condition, and I'll show you your political condition. The political economy of the black community rests on the premise that because they do not make their own money, they are enslaved to Europeans. And as a result of that, they will never be able to do what needs to be done to carve out a future for their children, because the hand that pays is also the hand that rules them.
Everybody, everybody, everybody. like this, the shape that I'm in. People start to ask me why. Why I drink so much alcohol. And that ain't all. That ain't all. I say people are starting to ask me why. Why I never laugh. I don't laugh no more and I don't smile. At all. At all. At all.
Holiday mode. Got New Year's Eve to come in, the new year, 2020 coming in. Today's podcast is titled Privatized Marriage. Privatized Marriage. And essentially, some of you might be saying, what's a privatized marriage? It's simply keeping the government or not involving the government in your relationship, marriage relationship. This can be done with any two consenting adults, but let's go for the traditional male and female. Instead of getting a marriage license from your local government office that handles that sort of thing, you two individuals, two private citizens, can get together and write up your own marriage, because marriage is a contract. Write up your own contract between you two and save yourself $2 or whatever a marriage license might cost at City Hall. And you can be perfectly legally married, because you have a legally binding contract between you two, and the government is not involved in your relationship. If you get a marriage license, then your de facto partner, your third wheel, is the government that issued that license. And probably then some more state, federal Depends on what the issue is. But, and that could be handled, in a myriad of ways. Matter of fact, it's, like I said, we're still in holiday mode here, so I'm going to try to get a couple of people on here to comment on that. One is particularly a lawyer who's been on here a few times. I'm going to see if I can get Warren Houston on here because we're just shooting on the hip. But today we're talking about privatized marriage. I'm all for them. I'm all for privatized marriages, which is basically keeping the government out of your relationship. But that's me. What say you? 619-768-2945 or 319-527-4961.
Hi, everybody. I'm Dan, and welcome to Narcs and Honey. So I saw a video recently by another creator of narcissist videos, and she was going over the MGTOW movement. So I started looking into it, and I just wanted to do a really brief video about my thoughts about this movement. I don't know if you can call it a movement, about men going their own way, and maybe some of the reasons why men are going their own way. Many good men have been burnt by narcissists and the legal system, and these men have realized that relationships are so fraught with danger that they have removed themselves from society. The MGTOW movement is a belief system that has millions of male adherents who have decided that the pain of loneliness is preferable to the dangers of female companionship. Fundamentally, in this age of narcissism, more women are chasing after fewer men. Let me explain. I was doing Airbnb, and most of the people renting out rooms were men, and these were divorced men who had all lost their homes, half their incomes, and could only see their children on weekends. These were men who could only afford a bedroom on Airbnb while their wives lived in their old homes, often with their new boyfriends. These were men who had to pay anywhere from $500 to $1,000 a week and couldn't even afford to rent an apartment. These were broken men who had once had a respectable job, a house where they could come home to their children every day, and I got to know these men. The majority had been cheated on and their lives destroyed forever because their wives got tired of them. I met dozens of these men just by doing Airbnb for a short while, and none of these men will ever get seriously involved with a woman ever again. And men who haven't had bad experiences have so many friends and family who have had terrible experiences that they feel the only way to protect themselves is complete removal from the marketplace of relationships. Half my cousins and friends have had bad experiences so bad that they are scary enough to have any man forgo any future relationships. And what's really scary is that it's not only middle-aged and older men giving up on relationships. There are hundreds of young men on YouTube, and these are healthy, successful, good-looking men who decided to become chaste in the prime of their life because they thought it was preferable to taking a chance on women. They spend most of their spare time trying to convince other young men to do the very same thing. There is a last reason why you can't find a partner and why many men have gone MGTOW. The reason is found in this graph, which analyzed dating preferences on Tinder, Match.com, and OkCupid. This graph shows that while unattractive men will date unattractive women and average men find average women attractive, most women only find men in the top 10% attractive. Additionally, this article in the New York Times describes studies showing that we have 2 to 3 times as many female descendants as male descendants, which is of course scary in its implications, especially considering that marriage has been the norm for thousands of years. Men have an intuitive understanding of this, and really these facts alone are enough to keep men from pursuing female companionship. Women, as a group, according to these studies, all think they are in the top 20%. and only want the men in the top 10%. And half of these men who are at the top are, of course, narcissists.
Okay, well, that's my brief understanding of why this MGTOW movement may have started and the reasoning behind it. So if you have any other ideas about what it's all about or what can be done about it or anything else, leave your comments below. Thanks for watching.
A man's lie is like I was at Tony's house. I'm at Kenny's house. That's a man's lie. A woman's lie is like, it's your baby.
After Paris, his wife cheated on him, so he was always checking to see if his kids looked like him. He was the first man in Bed-Stuy to get a DNA test.
The practice of passing off a pregnancy as somebody else's has been with us since the beginning of time. What the DNA testing is doing for us is bringing us to a point where we can have factual evidence for that.
Women have always been promiscuous and unfaithful. That's why chastity belts were invented. It's also why scientists believe the penis is shaped in the way it is, to remove other men's sperm from women's vaginas before depositing their own. Yet it's typically the man who's painted as a philanderer.
Men cheat for the same reason that dogs lick their balls. Because they can. It's part of their biology.
Women cheat.
Yeah, but it's completely different.
How?
Because we don't go around randomly attacking any man that we're attracted to.
Speak for yourself.
We're not driven by testosterone.
When women are unfaithful, it tends to be without the use of protection, which makes the whole thing even worse for the man.
And Susan admits she's not sure her husband Nick is the father of her baby. Now, if not, the father could be the man she met on the way to the chip shop after a rare night out on the town.
However, the prevalence of paternity fraud is much greater than most people realize.
Approximately between 10 and 12% we prove that the man who we test is not the father of the child.
On average, 1 in 10 children are not fathered by the man that appears on their birth certificate. But that figure fluctuates depending on which socioeconomic group you're in. So it goes down to about 1% of children in higher socioeconomic groups, and it can go up to about as high as 30% of children in lower socioeconomic groups.
In the US, about 10 million kids are being raised by men that think they're the fathers, but are not. And in Britain, the figure is believed to be around 1 million children.
That means 1 in 20 children, or 1 in every class at school, is not fathered by the man who thinks he's the dad.
Look, if I was a man, and my wife has been on a trip to New York, and she comes back, and 6 months later she's pregnant, I'm going to DNA test.
There is a presumption in law that husbands are the fathers of children. That's the great presumption of British law. But I think when there's ever been any kind of anonymous research, statistically, it's incredibly striking. It's quite striking how many husbands are not the biological fathers of their children. And if you had a law where every mother was forced to tell, you might open, it could be a big can of worms, that.
Robin Baker, a biological psychologist, has studied paternity fraud and its effects. He found that it was a common occurrence and was demonstrably poisonous to family structure and the health and upbringing of children.
This is a great opportunity for us, Peter.
What about me, huh? You ever think about that? I mean, you want to take him away from his father?
You may not even be his father.
What?
He may not be yours. There was somebody else. It was just casual. And then there was you.
It has to be the ultimate betrayal a woman can commit against a man, which is then compounded by years of her lying, which can only be described as deeply evil.
But I don't know what's worse, that she's always known or she's just doing this to get Reese.
Well, I got a paternity test. I haven't taken it yet.
How long does it take?
I don't know. I don't know that I'm going to do it.
You have to.
What if I'm not his father, huh?
It goes back to thinking about why families break down and or more generally, why would individuals be unsatisfied with their partners?
Often a man may suspect that a child is not his, but not be certain of it.
A few years later, we were having our first child from my own personal feed. There he was.
Earl Jr.
And where a father is doubtful of his paternity, consciously or subconsciously, all sorts of relationship problems are bound to occur. It leads almost inevitably to family breakdown and fatherlessness.
One man, his child had red hair, and he had dark hair, and he didn't even like to be seen out with it.
And of course, if the father walks out, we don't know the reason. He's just another example of male irresponsibility, another deadbeat dad.
Parental care is a very costly and valuable resource. We don't expect people to spread it about willy-nilly. We expect them to direct their parental care to their genetic children.
Undoubtedly, because paternity fraud committed by women is so common, it's not legal in this country to get a paternity test without the permission of the mother or a court order.
As well as having the consent of the mother, we also need the child's consent if the child is considered to be GILIC competent, or we use whether a child is at secondary age as some sort of guide as to whether they're competent. So, and it's got to be informed consent, so they must know why they're doing it, and they must know about the confidentiality of the process. There are times when we're approached by the putative father to test a child without the mother's consent, or they may say the mother doesn't want to give consent, in which case we won't do it without the mother's consent.
A man can only find out if his wife cheated on him and had another man's child with her permission. The government heeds advice that this is in the best interests of the child.
Hello guys, this is Red Pill Andy. Thank you for tuning in today. And today we're going to talk about why more American men will marry foreign women. Okay, so first of all, this is something that I've actually thought of doing. And by the way, that's not to say that there aren't any good women here in America. There's a lot of great women here in America. However, because the gender roles have been switched so much, with women going into the workplace, basically, you know, women have a lot of freedom, which is great, by the way, which is great. So let me start by saying that feminism has done some great things. For example, women's rights, women's freedom, women being able to work, and women, you know, women starting their own businesses, women have more freedom now. Which is great, because you know we're supposed to be upgrading. You know we're not cavemen anymore. So you know you can't keep women, you know, try to keep her down and you know still stuck in the kitchen. You know, I like to see women, you know, with freedom. You know, doing you know whatever it is that they desire to do. However, I feel as though nowadays, fast forward to 2018. Actually, since the 2000 and ever since like the Obama era from 2008 to 2016, the Obama era, feminism has done some damage. And I mean, I'll give you an example. Like I remember one time I walked into Barnes and Noble and I saw this girl, this feminist. She like had her head shaved. This girl had shaved her head. She let her hair grow, her legs, like her hair legs, they were just growing. Basically, she looked like a man, basically. She looked like a man. And I don't know, she was dressed all pig, just kind of like sluggish, you know, like, it looked like she pigged out, you know. I didn't know this girl, I just, you know, it's just somebody I saw in Barnes and Noble's. And immediately I knew that she was a feminist because, you know, how she looked. I didn't even have to ask her immediately. You guys can argue with me on this, but... And I just thought, wow, this is what feminism is doing to women. So, I mean, I've seen women, like, shave their head and then just kind of pig out, basically to show what? But what are they trying to demonstrate exactly? That they're more like men now, you know? That they're more like men? That they can do the same thing that man can, you know. You know, I feel as though, you know, we're living in great times, but a lot of women just want to be men, you know. They don't want to be more feminine. They want to be more like men. That's the problem that I have with feminism today. Not the old feminism, not the how feminism started, because it started out positive. And I was just like this man-hating thing. Like, I know Emma Watson is like, she's one of those, like, I guess, like, hardcore feminists, and she thinks that, I don't know, it's like men should do more things for women. But here's my question when it comes to feminism. It's like, how much more freedom do women need to the point where it's perfectly balanced? You understand what I mean? How much more freedom do women need? How much more are they going to put men down? And if women want to be more like men, why don't they take responsibility? Like, for example, with the whole marriage thing, for example, like when a man and a woman get divorced, you know, it's usually the men that get beat up by divorce. Most likely, you know, the woman keeps the kids, usually takes his money, keeps the car, and the man, in many, many, many cases, this is a fact, the man basically ends up broke. And women think it's okay to do this, you know, to just take so much from a man and not have to give back. And I've seen so many women do that. Like, they think it's okay to just take, and not have to give back to a man. So it's like the relationships are out of balance. And by the way, this is Western women. This is very common in Western women, and in the East has not been affected so much by it. You know, like in the East, like in Japan, Korea, China, you know, in East Asian cultures, Russia especially, you know, men like to be masculine, women like to be feminine. You know, they're still very traditional in those countries. And that is why a lot of American men, a lot of Western men, Canadian, American, they are, even in European men, like in England, they are starting to look elsewhere for women that are more, not women that are submissive, but more feminine, women that like to be women, women that love men, you know. And I mean, I know a guy, for example, you could look at David Bond's YouTube channel on this. And I believe that more and more men are going to look to other countries, some third world countries, some, you know, like some East European countries like the Ukraine, Russia, Japan, Thailand, Philippines, you know, all these countries. More men are going to look for wives in those countries. And a lot of Western women are going to have to step up their game because, you know, looks are great, but in the long run, with all this feminism and all this women wanting to be like men, you know, and the energies being out of balance, also, you know, men, you know, the relationships being out of balance and the men and female roles just being distorted, people are not happy anymore. You know, men are not happy anymore with relationships. And, you know, because at the end of the day, a man wants to go, you know, when he's done from work, he wants to go home and have his wife, you know, doing things for him. And a lot of Western women, they think that, for example, like if a guy asks his girlfriend to, like, clip his toenails, I'm Latino, so a lot of Latino women like to, you know, take care of their men like this. But, like, if you tell this to an American woman, they'll be like, why would I cut my boyfriend's toenails? Like, he can do that himself. You know, that's called love. That's what it's called. When you love somebody, you do a lot of things for them, you know. Very intimate things like that. And women are becoming so masculine nowadays that they think that serving their man, doing something like that, it's like wrong, and it's like ill, and it's like ugh, like, you know, kind of like an embarrassing thing to do. But men love it when women do these things. As a matter of fact, that's one of the best ways to keep a man, is to, you know, do these really intimate things for your man. Massaging him, you know, cutting his nails, his toenails, you know, doing all these things. But I feel as though that's something that's kind of looked down upon with Western women. Anyways, this is one of the reasons why I think a lot of men are going to start looking, you know, to the East, or actually South America, for real feminine women that love men, and in our traditional with the male and female role. You know, I believe that's what's going to happen. Anyways, you guys can, you know, argue with me on this. I'd like to hear your thoughts on this and what you think. So subscribe to my channel. Click on the subscription button, the notification bell, like this video, leave a comment, tell me what you think. And I just wanted to really give my thoughts on this. I'm honestly one of those guys. You know, I'm gonna travel to Japan next year and really see what life is like over there, and really meet the girls in Japan, which is gonna be fun. And yeah, so that is it, guys.
right, today's podcast is titled, but it's loose titled, Privatized Marriage. Privatized Marriage, 619-768-2945 or 319-527-4961. What are your thoughts, if any, on privatized marriage? In other words, if you want to get married, instead of going to City Hall and paying whatever fee they have to get a marriage license, you and whoever you're going to get married to sit down and come up with a marriage contract between you two. It's private. Because the moment you go to City Hall, wherever you go locally, as soon as you go to the government and pay them for a marriage license, which is really just a profit center to the government, then you're in your de facto partner at that point becomes the state. And that might not turn out well for either one of you. Because you do have divorce court, and a lot of those people that are in divorce court, basically, in my opinion, torpedoed their relationship when they invited a third wheel on from the giddy up when they got that marriage license. Now, of course, every relationship is different. And I'm not saying that the government ruined your marriage or anything like that. But I'm just saying, why invite an unnecessary, the way I see it, why invite an unnecessary third party into your relationship? You should be able to govern your relationship. But that's my opinion. All right, so questions of the day. Should the state get out of the marriage business altogether? And then number two, what do you prefer? State-sanctioned marriage or marriages, privatized marriages? In other words, two individuals, they decide, okay, you know what, we're not going to have anything state sanctioned. We don't need the third party in our relationship. We don't need the third party to govern our relationship. It's just the buck stops here. Let's write up our own contract and go from there. 619-768-2945. If you have any thoughts on this, mine is I'm all for privatized. I don't need the government in as a de facto partner in anything I do on that level. 314, your mic is open.
Well, hello, L.A. How are you?
I'm fine. Almost the last day of the year.
Mm-hmm.
And decade.
Yeah, that's something. Yeah, 10 years, man. Another 10 years.
Yep. Sure did.
But, you know, people got a right to do that now if they want to. Well, what is the... You can go out and have those type of secret marriages to as many people as you want.
True.
But the government is only going to recognize one.
If you get one of their marriage licenses, yeah, I guess so.
Yeah, that's the only one that's going to count.
Mm-hmm.
When you go into other...
That's if you want the government... Me, personally, I don't want the government involved in my relationship, but that's me.
Well, if you go to buy a house in Louisiana, they're going to ask you if you're married.
The context that they're asking
Yeah.
Is do I or for if I have a traditional, you know what? Even what is a traditional marriage license?
Well, they're gonna ask you if you're married, and if you are, they're gonna put her name on the deed. Now, they can provide you with papers that she can sign, stating that she don't want to have her name on the deed.
All right.
Because when I bought property in Louisiana, that's what I had to do.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't pertaining to no one, just no multiple wives, because Louisiana don't recognize polygamy.
Polygamy or bigamy?
Well, bigamy is when you married to somebody else and messing with somebody else.
You have one legal marriage license.
Well, they only gonna recognize one license. If you go to another state, if you marry a person in one state, then you're gonna go to another state. That's gonna cause some ramifications because those are contracts. You're signing contracts with one person on the same piece of option. It's like selling a house twice.
Right.
So if these guy that was in this interview, nobody's stopping you from having that type of arrangement. Just go ahead and do it. You don't have to tell no one or anything else. And I don't understand why come it would need to be publicly advertised unless he's trying to come up with some other legal angle, whereas the states, either the local state or the federal, they want them to recognize it. And, you know, if you go out and marry a foreign spouse, if the marriage was recognized in the country, the area where the marriage was taking place, then the United States is obligated to respect it.
Right.
But the United States is not going to be obligated to respect if you bring two wives to the country. They only going to respect one.
Right.
Even though multiple wives marriages is allowed in the country that you came from. And that's just the way that is.
Well,
you know, I was gonna, unless
go ahead,
you thinking of, yeah. Well, I was gonna kind of switch channels there a little bit.
If you want to, my whole thing is for me now. This isn't just me personally. I'd rather do it the privatized way and leave the state completely out.
Well, how are you going to claim on your income tax?
Well, like I said, it's a contract, so you can write it up, you know, as a business contract, and, you know, their partnerships, their business partnerships with property, their business partnerships with businesses, and you know, in those tax returns, the CPA handles all that.
Yeah,
so,
but they ain't going to recognize
it
as a spouse. And if you have a child, they're not going to recognize it as a dependent.
Well, that's why I'm saying I would call a CPA in on it. But that's the way I would do it. I don't want because once you buy that once you get that marriage license, you are inviting the state into your relationship. I'd rather draw other contracts and not have that headache.
Well, if you have a child, the state's going to be brought into the ordeal because they have to protect the sanctity of the child.
We move somewhere else then.
Well, it's going to be the same thing where you go. That the child is a federal citizen. But look at this. If you your child was going off to college, and you, as a grandparent, moved to that state and bought a place so that that child could save money and don't have to live in a dorm, which can cost up to $12,000 a year or more.
Mm-hmm.
Well, being that that child is your grandchild, you allow to carry that child as a dependent on your taxes.
Okay.
Yeah.
I see. There's rules and regulations on this, like I said, because once you pay that whatever fee for the marriage license, you automatically come under a lot of rules and regulations. Now, I'm going to airlift just a little bit, because the concept of the marriage license, divorce court, family court, if you look at the history of marriage, okay, those are basically concepts that are just a blip on the screen, because 100 years ago, in most places, all a marriage license is a revenue center for a government. That's all it is. And if things go left and then out of that, well, let's make some more money. Because that's how the government operates. Well, all right, well, we got $2 out of them for getting married. Now, if they get divorced, well, we can get more money that way. If they have a squabble, there's family court. If we have a squabble in another direction, there's divorce court. You go back,
well,
and like I said, you look at the history of marriage.
Yeah, the government get involved because there's property in concern.
Family courts, all that did not exist.
Yeah. Now, some agencies recognize common law marriages where
they
you live.
Do. Yeah.
I knew the military did at one time.
And once again, that's the way the nature of government. They're looking for ways. They're ravenous for revenue. They're looking for. I mean, that's how really the whole Western Hemisphere got developed by Europeans and other people as well, is because England, France, Spain, at the top of the list, they were. The local, state, and federal governments from 400 or 500 years ago were just taking. So they came over here, the whole entire Western Hemisphere, where none of this stuff existed. Now it's catching up to us. So they're nickel and diming us. Now, I had a conversation about an hour ago with somebody. I said, look, if you want to get away from, because if you live in a lot of these larger cities, you're paying for the comfort and convenience. But if you live out in a rural area, I mean, for instance, if you live in a rural area, if you're fine with not having to go to a Whole Foods that's 20 minutes away or that you can walk to, live rural. If you're all right without going to Whole Foods or having a bowling alley around the corner, go to a rural area or even go further out in a remote area. But...
Well, you know, there's other benefits, too. You got access to potable water, electricity.
I can have potable water in the country.
Well, yeah, but
the
thing it's the convenience of it.
Well, once again, you're paying. If you want those, all right, if you want the comfort and conveniences, you're right. If you want the comfort and conveniences of a paved sidewalk, or even having sidewalks, of having somebody pick up your trash, of having to pick up your recycling.
Right, pick up your trash, ambulance service, in case you get sick, they'll be there real quick.
You'll never use all of them. Then live.
Now the reason. Yeah, another reason why I come is because if you have children, well, whether you like it or not, those children, being the fact that they're United States citizens, and citizens of the state in which they was born, according to the Constitution, they should be afforded. They're entitled to be afforded to those privileges also and conveniences. And that can run into
I'll give you an example. Taft, Oklahoma is country. Okay. It's not remote, but it's country. All right. There's one little store in now, sort of like a carryout now. That's it. That and five churches. It's country. All right.
Mm-hmm.
You're not going to go shopping in Taft, Oklahoma. as with a gazillion other towns peppered all over the United States. However, if you're willing to drive 15, 20 minutes into Muskogee, Oklahoma, you got the Walmart there, you got restaurants there, you got the bowling alley, you got all the modern conveniences in Muskogee. However, the cost of living is dramatically lower in Taft, Oklahoma, as it is in any rural town, or most rural towns. I'm not going to say any rural town, but many rural towns. So I'd rather have, because that's one of the reasons why a lot of people are homeless right now, in my opinion, not all. I'm not counting the mentally ill. But, it, for instance, I have a friend of mine, he's been gone now 3 years, passed away 3 years ago, this past September. Mm-hmm. And he was paying, he was married, his rent was $1,750 a month. He was paying that. Now, he's married. His wife's working, too. I found this out from his widow about maybe 6 months after he was gone. And now, when I hear you're paying $1,750 a month rent, here's what's ringing in my mind. I can go out and buy me two used Rolls Royces, or at least rent that for that amount of money. Had he moved like 45 minutes to an hour away from where he was living, he could have found a place where he would have been paying $400 to $500 a month for an entire house and just commute to work.
Well, that's just, well, you know, it depends on what people want.
That's true.
It's good that people,
that is true.
It's good that people have a choice, a
true
choice to choose from. But the thing that you have to be cognizant of, if you bring other humans into the situation, then you have to be conscious of the rights that they have, and that is being children. Because courts will take that child away from you.
They didn't have any problems. They didn't have any domestic problems, but I'm looking at this man might be living, he might be living today, because that's a hell of a house, in my opinion. $1,700 mm-hmm. a month. I mean, had he moved, they were right outside of Washington, D.C., which is expensive. Had they gone, drive 45 minutes to an hour in one direction to Baltimore, Maryland, they could have had four houses, four three-bedroom houses with a basement, three stories, for that amount of money, and had money left over. Because he died of a heart attack. He died of a heart attack right on the job. He was a school teacher. So I'm just saying, if the you do have a choice, you know, and I'm looking at if you want all those conveniences, that you're not even going to utilize all those conveniences, all right? But if you can afford it, if you want to live in the heart of Manhattan, New York, live there. But if you're struggling, take a look at something 30 minutes, an hour, maybe 2 hours away, because there are plenty of people that do commute. You know, there are people that live in New York that commute to D.C. to work. Some do it. Some get on that Amtrak daily. Some fly in daily. Some drive 4 hours one way, 4 hours back. They got videos on the internet with all this stuff. And then some people work during the week, commute back on the weekends. Some people just stay in the pit, and then anyway. But I say, figure out something that's a little bit more sustainable. You know, it's because, like I say, this is a very subjective type thing, and people have to decide, okay, what's going to work best for me. And then if you're in a relationship, what's going to work best for the both of us. So, but when it comes to privatized marriage, anyway, that I rather go the private way. That's just me, though.
Now, one other thing. On your advertisements about Mr. Johnson, Umar, when he's mm-hmm. making reference that kids that get education shouldn't be working for the white man, to sum it all up, that's about the most stupidest thing I've heard people say. And that gets back down to that mentality that, one, all blacks the same, and they should stay in their own separate paradigm. And they're not part of America. If one would put it out on a piece on a table and lay it out, that's what it would look like. And that is just totally ridiculous. You've seen those type of ploys throughout the history of blacks being in this country. You've seen it with Du Bois and his attacks on Marcus Garvey, because Marcus Garvey seemingly was pulling a following for his ideology. Mm-hmm. You've seen it with Booker T. Washington, with his attack on Hubert Harrison, when it looked like Hubert Harrison was starting to pull a group toward his ideology during the Harlem Renaissance. You see it with the Nation of Islam, with Elijah Muhammad toward Malcolm X, when it seemed like Malcolm X was pulling a grouping toward his ideology style, Farrakhan, the same way. You see it with church groups. Ray Higgins, when he started in St. Louis, you had local pastors come out and attack him because he was filling his place up where people were listening to his ideology. So Johnson is telling, making reference, and I've heard this before from others, they make mention that people go to school and get an education, go to college and come out and work for white folks. Well, who in the hell are you going to work for in a particular major that you have? These folks are ignorant as hell. They are just totally ignorant.
Most people that attend an HBCU and graduate from an HBCU, well over, I'm going to put it at 90%. At least 90% of those people go to work for white folks.
And that's like this other movement saying that black athletes should attend these historic black colleges. No, they shouldn't. They should go where the heck they think is best for them. If they want to go play for Nebraska, or Ohio State, and the LSU, that's their business. They going to where it's best.
Let me ask you this question on HBCUs. You might know the answer to this. I don't know. I haven't done enough research on it. How many of the HBCUs that are still standing, you know what percentage ballpark that were actually started by black folks?
I don't think any. I don't know. I ain't going to say any of them,
Morgan
but I don't know.
Was not started by black folks. Morgan State was started by founded by the state of Maryland.
Yeah, I couldn't tell you.
Howard,
I know one thing.
Anybody.
I've heard people representing them say that their number is going to dwindle down to about maybe 25. But black kids don't go to those schools themselves for whatever reason. My grandson didn't go to one because he went to a school that had a immaculate engineering program plus a baseball mm-hmm. team that's similar. You know, when you look at black professions, blacks is 13% of the population, only make up 60% of doctors and surgeons. In 2018, 314,300 pharmacists. Blacks make up 7% of that, about 22,000. Heck, if they
now,
were to equate.
All right, cuz. I believe I heard a stat a couple of months ago. Out of the black professional, out of the black doctors, MDs in the country, about 70 or 80% of them are Nigerian.
Well, it possibly is so.
Yeah.
But the numbers are still there, comparatively,
right,
to the population, which is 7% of them. 7% of all the doctors and surgeons, blacks make up 6%. Of the pharmacists, blacks make up 7% rather than 13%. That 7% equates to about 22,000, whereas it should possibly be 41 to 47,000.
Right.
8% of general engineering majors, 7% of math majors, only 5% of computer engineering majors, 7% of finance and marketing majors. Most of the degrees that they have is in intellectual and caring professions like health and administrative services, where they're about 21%. But check this out. Asians, whose population is 5.6% of the U.S. population, which is where blacks is about 2.3 times more with 13%. Asians have over 20% of the pharmacist jobs, or 63.5 thousand to 68.5 thousand of the jobs. And they only make up 5.6% of the population. I mean, are you hearing what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Asians make up 5.6% of the U.S. population, and they have 20.2% of all the pharmacist jobs. These jobs, medium is over $123,000. Some of them is up to $134,000. Medium. Asians have close to 63 to 68,000 pharmacists in a country where they only make up less than 6% of the population.
Well,
what does it tell you?
There's a few things there.
Then you have him make the statements that he states. So what are blacks supposed to do? Stick around, sit around idle on their hands until somebody black come up with some pharmacist operations? They ain't gonna do that. And you know the thing about that, people sitting there listening to that, and they would subscribe to that as if it was the gospel of Jesus Christ.
And many people do, as you know.
Where's Robin at today?
You know, I spoke to her this morning about three hours ago now. But I popped up on the radar this morning, but I talked to her for about 15 minutes this morning. So she might be, I don't know, she might be helping her grand, because like I said, she's 3 hours behind me, so she could
be.
Yeah,
she's very warming up some noodles or something.
But
that marriage thing is, that's my opinion on it. But anyway,
well,
you gonna be on tomorrow?
Yeah.
All right. Well, I'll catch you tomorrow.
Okay. All right. Well, on that note, folks, I am going to wrap it up for today because I got a 1 o'clock appointment here. So I'm going to wrap it up. Everybody have a safe, continued safe holiday.
At Jiffy Lube, we care about cars. In fact, we're kind of obsessed. That's why we've been taking care of business with quick quality oil changes and service for over 40 years. And with things like our Carful Vehicle Review, where our experts will check, fill, clean, and inspect your vehicle, you'll know we'll car for your car like we car for our own. Jiffy Lube. Car more.
Visit JiffyLubeDC.com to find a Jiffy Lube service center near you.